Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 12th, 2022. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Gunshots from hunters outside Moscow caused police to start assembling SWAT team. Investigate West reports Northern Idaho far-right political operative Dave Riley involved in the 2017 Unite the Right rally was working for the Idaho Freedom Foundation. Washington Governor Jay Inslee advocates spending nearly $1 billion on climate programs in the next year, and Moscow committee recommends changes to city's affordable housing grant program. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Police in Moscow were assembling a SWAT team this morning after they received reports of shots fired in the Orchard Avenue area, but later determined the shots were from hunters who were hunting legally outside the city limits. A spotter told KRFP he saw police gathering at the city shop at Morton and Polk Streets, with numerous police from various jurisdictions gathering with people in camo walking around with long guns. At about 9 a.m., police sent out an alert asking people in the Orchard Avenue and Public Avenue areas to shelter in place. They lifted the shelter-in-place advisory about an hour later at 10 a.m. The Daily News website reported Moscow Police, Pullman Police, Washington State University Police, and the Latah County Sheriff's Office responded. A report from Investigate West says far-right political activist Dave Riley of Post Falls has been working as a communication strategist for the Anti-Education Idaho Freedom Foundation, which has been rating legislators by their willingness to vote with the foundation's far-right agenda, and has become one of the more powerful forces in Idaho politics. Investigate West reports court testimony and leaked chat messages show Riley, who lived in Pennsylvania in 2017, was involved in brainstorming, planning, and promoting the August 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and was one of the organizers who advocated marching straight through the commons of the University of Virginia with tiki torches at a night rally because it would, quote, give us the opportunity to take photos and videos and lots of good propaganda. A leader of the white nationalist group Identity Europa from North Carolina responded to the post saying he was in favor of the strategy. Since moving to northern Idaho, Riley has gotten the support of the far-right Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee, which vets candidates for local races to make sure they are right-wing enough to gain their support. Riley ran for Post Falls School Board in 2021 and lost. He is also notable for frequent anti-Semitic comments on social media. Investigate West said they determined the self-described Christian nationalist Riley was working for the Idaho Freedom Foundation by searching for Riley's first name in the Idaho Freedom Foundation's Gmail domain, and they found his email account with the foundation along with his picture popping up. Idaho Freedom Foundation Vice President Ali Miguel told Investigate West that the IFF had hired Riley to work for them, but he was, quote, just a contractor. The report says contractors do important work for the IFF, however, including grading how legislative bills score on their Freedom Index. Miguel said she'd rather not say whether Riley was still working for them. Another contractor for the foundation, Parrish Miller, once wrote, after the 2016 Malheur National Wildlife Refuge standoff in 2016, it's long past time to give up on politics and start shooting tyrants. Now disappeared organizer for the Malheur Wildlife Refuge takeover, Eamon Bundy of Emmett, contracted with an ad firm connected with Riley called Revere Media during his campaign last year for governor. Bundy paid Revere Media $30,000 for marketing. At the time, Riley resurrected an old personal account and pretended to be an Antifa-supporting leftist and claimed Bundy might be too tough on groomers in the account. Investigate West contacted 10 Idaho legislators who are most supported by the Idaho Freedom Foundation to ask how they felt about the group employing Riley, and only one, Senator Scott Herndon of Sagal, responded, but he said he would not talk about Riley. Contacted by reporter Heath Drusen last year, Idaho Freedom Foundation Director Wayne Hoffman. Reporter Heath Drusen contacted Idaho Freedom Foundation Director Wayne Hoffman last year with screenshots of Riley claiming Jews pretend to be white when expedient, and Hoffman replied, "I don't know the guy, and I'm not in the habit of accepting whatever pretend reporters have to say on the topic." The Idaho Supreme Court heard arguments in the Babe Vote and League of Women Voters of Idaho lawsuit against the state challenging a new law that took away students' rights to use their student IDs as identification to register to vote or to cast ballots at polling places. One of the new laws also limits the acceptable forms of proof of residency. The Idaho legislature passed two new voter identification laws this year that reflect the type of people they want to vote and those who they want to suppress. The laws allow the use of concealed weapons permits and military IDs, as well as driver's licenses and free Department of Transportation issued IDs. Attorneys for Babe Vote and the League of Women Voters told the Supreme Court justices yesterday that the new laws heavily restrict the right to vote, especially for young people and those who don't have a driver's license. Attorneys representing Republican Secretary of State Phil McGrane argued the legislature is ensuring safe elections, raising the specter of voter fraud, which has been used in states since 2020, where the right wing is trying to suppress voters around the country. The two voters' rights groups are appealing a decision by Ada County District Court Judge Samuel Hoagland in October that dismissed the case. Hoagland said the new laws do not unduly burden voters. Washington Governor Jay Inslee yesterday proposed the state allocate $941 million next year towards clean energy, environmental justice, and transportation projects that would mitigate climate change. Inslee also proposed lawmakers pass three new laws related to climate. One would force gasoline producers to increase transparency about prices. Another would link Washington's carbon market with California and Quebec. And the third would transition Puget Sound energy away from fossil fuels in an effort to limit methane gas use. According to the spokesman review, under Inslee's plan, the state would use $322 million out of the $941 million for environmental justice projects, such as energy vouchers for low- and middle-income Washingtonians, improving school ventilation systems, and air pollution mitigation projects in low-income communities. Another $182 million would go to lowering carbon emissions from buildings, including transitioning universities away from fossil fuels and subsidizing heat pumps for low-income multifamily households. The State Building Code Council voted last month to adopt a policy that would make it nearly impossible to use natural gas to heat newly built homes. The new codes highly favor the use of heat pumps for new homes. $170 million of Inslee's plan would fund green jobs and infrastructure. The state would match federal grants that local tribes, utilities, ports, nonprofits, academic institutions, and businesses have obtained. Speaking in a crowded gymnasium at the Miller Community Center in Seattle yesterday, Governor Inslee said, "Climate change is not a fair thing. It punishes the poor more than the rich. It punishes the kids who live next to a freeway having to breathe diesel smoke their whole lives." You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care. Family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
The Moscow City Council's Public Works Finance Committee yesterday recommended the city modify the requirements of the city's affordable housing grant program. The agenda item said the grant program, quote, has proven to be overly restrictive or cumbersome to the development community. As a result, the program has been underutilized and not resulted in the needed construction of new affordable homes. Staff is proposing an update to simplify the application requirements with the goal of facilitating an increase in affordable home construction. At yesterday's Public Works Finance Committee meeting, Deputy City Supervisor for Community Development Cody Riddle and City Supervisor Bill Belknap explained the proposed changes and answered questions from committee members.
As you'll recall, the city adopted or approved an affordable housing grant program back in fall of 2021. Since then, you've awarded $120,000 in grants or funds for six new homes. One of them has been complete to date, with four more likely to occur or to be complete this next construction year. The hang up, though, with not seeing more is largely in the original language required them to commit to that affordability in perpetuity. And that's been a struggle with the affordable housing developers and with their lenders and partners. So we've included just two minor but hopefully important changes in the grant program. One, that commitment be changed from perpetuity to 50 years, to a term of 50 years. And then the second change, there were two kind of formulas for calculating eligibility. It got a little bit cumbersome or confusing for developers, and so we're suggesting a change there. Grants would still be limited to 80% for those earning 80% or lower of the area median income, and that ultimately the cost, principal, utilities, taxes, insurance still could not exceed 35% of a buyer's income. And so with that, again, one of the very few tools the city does have to move the needle in terms of affordable housing, and our hope is that with these minor changes, it does so. So we would ask for your recommendation for approval to the full council.
Cody, wasn't it 70% earning 70% or less before?
It was, you had to be 80% or lower to be eligible, and then there was kind of a complex calculation. One of them was 70% or lower, but in that one it didn't cap things at the 35% of their income. So we simplified it into one hopefully easy to use formula. Good. You know, some of it is estimates around utilities and things like that, sure, where it's new construction often, but
Cody, just had a question for you quickly on the 35% threshold. So the annual mortgage payment amount, including related expenses, may not exceed 35% of the annual household income. Do we want to, I guess I'm just curious if we feel like we need to identify, so we're saying the buyer has to have a household income that's 80% or less of the AMI. And then we're saying 35% of the annual household income. So are we saying the buyer's household income?
Correct.
Okay. I'm wondering if we ought to just add a buyer's to their, so that we're tying that 35% to somebody who's 80% or below.
We could add buyer's again to that second.
Might just
cannot exceed 35% of a specific
of the buyer's annual.
That's what it says.
In section B.
Sorry, I was looking at the summary.
6.B of the attached resolution B just states the annual mortgage payment. So it says that the buyer's household income, so A is the buyer's household income shall be 80% or less of the Lathrop County AMI. And B, it states the annual mortgage payment amount may not exceed 35% of the annual household income. And I just we might want to clarify what annual household income. The buyer's just tying it into that.
Yeah.
So that it's essentially 35% of somebody who is at 80% or less than
correct
annual household income.
Is it normal to include utilities in that calculation about housing?
For cost burden, typically, if you're looking at that, and 35% is probably, yeah, 30 to 35% is the typical number used to determine whether somebody's cost burden. It usually involves all housing expenses.
I just didn't realize utilities was usually included.
Yeah.
And given that it went to 35, I think adding utilities in there makes sense.
Had it been a hang-up for some folks, or just for our folks or buyers, this formula, or did just someone just recognize and be like, wow, we can make this easier?
Some of both. I mean, yeah. We have a limited pool. Honestly, we worked with so far with two groups, and it was a challenge for both. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Moscow Affordable Housing Trust is one of the groups. Who's the other group?
Habitat for Humanity.
Okay. Good. And then if these houses aren't complete is it 2 years?
The ones that we've granted so far do expire towards the end of 2024. And we'll want to be mindful of that, and that some of it was a commitment, I guess, of the ARPA funds.
So they need to be obligated by the end of 24 and expended by the end of 26. So we could certainly extend the obligation, but we have to be mindful that if it's not expended by the end of 26, that we potentially, I'm not sure what we'd do with those funds then, because if they're obligated and not expended, I don't know what the remedy for that would be. So if it's going to be a situation where we're dependent upon somebody else's actions to expend those funds, we just might have to look by the end of 24 to change our method of commitment in some fashion. So we don't end up with a commitment that doesn't get fulfilled because it couldn't find buyers, you know, for whatever reason that precludes the unit construction. If we can't expend it by the end of 26 because they haven't completed it, that put us in a bit of an awkward position. So sure. We'll probably, as we approach towards the latter half of the upcoming year, we'll want to be monitoring the progress on those units and seeing whether we think those are actually going to be expended. And if not, we might look at other ways we can contribute towards affordable housing where we can ensure that that is expended by 26.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap speaking at yesterday's Moscow City Council Public Works Committee meeting. You also heard from Deputy City Supervisor for Community Development Cody Riddle and City Council members Julia Parker, Sandra Kelly, and Drew Davis in that clip. The Public Works Committee put the changes to the Affordable Housing Grant Program on the consent agenda for the next City Council meeting. The Pullman City Council will vote on two ordinances and two resolutions tonight. During the regular agenda, the City Council will vote on an ordinance adopting a biennial budget for the city for the biennium 2023 to 2024. They'll also vote on an ordinance amending Pullman Code for consistency throughout relating to certain civil penalties and related fines. They'll also vote on a resolution adopting fees for grave sites and services for City of Pullman cemeteries and rescinding the schedule of fees for grave sites and services adopted by a previous resolution. And they will vote on a resolution authorizing the use of electronic signatures in the city and adopting an electronic signature policy. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be cloudy tonight, becoming partly cloudy with a low of 26, mostly sunny tomorrow, high 38, mostly cloudy Wednesday night through Thursday night with lows of 28 and a high of 39 on Thursday, partly sunny, high 41 on Friday, currently 35 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also go to the Alternative Giving Market on the Palouse, which is holding its in-person program tonight at the Latah County Fairgrounds. That'll go on until 8 p.m. Or you can visit agmpalouse.org. KRFP is participating in the Alternative Giving Market of the Palouse, along with 30 other local nonprofits, where you can give gift cards in the name of the recipient and gifts to local charities that are helping our community. Also, look for the KRFP fundraising letter in the mail, which may have arrived in your mailbox in the last few days. It's also posted on the KRFP.org website. I'm Lee Robartes. Coming up is Flashpoints after a noise filter show. Have a good night, KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by Hotchins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hotchins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hotchins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hotchins at 208-882-5536.
Shortly before the beginning of this century, a small group had a vision of a great human service.
If you received an envelope from KRFP, open it.
These dreamers were pioneers. They envisioned a great institution.
It's the end of the year fundraising letter. KRFP is here bringing you local news, national programs, and dozens of types of entertainment.
Today, I want to show you this world-famous institution.
90 shows per week, friends and community members on the air.
I deem it a privilege to be able to serve
public service, public
service,
public service,
public service,
broadcasting.
Locally curated, no algorithms.
Look for the KRFP fundraising letter at krfp.org.